Recorded from the Oklahoma State University Stillwater campus, this is the Inside OSU podcast. Here are your hosts, Megan Robinson and First Cowboy Darren Shrum.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Inside OSU podcast. I am Megan Robinson, joined as always by my co-host, First Cowboy Darren Shrum. Today in our special episode, we are football season's here, guys. So who better than to have the newest member of the Cowboy coaching staff, defensive coordinator Brian Nardo, here on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time so close to week one.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
How does it feel to be in Stillwater?
Oh, it's been great. It's been, I want to say, probably 7 months now, eight months. So goes really fast, but it's been great.
What's been the biggest difference from coming from Erie, Pennsylvania to Stillwater, Oklahoma?
As far as community-wise, not that much difference, because Erie was a bigger city, about 100,000 people, but it felt really small because everyone seemed to know each other. The community of the school was really small, and this is where I spent a lot of time because I spent 8 years at Emporia State. So I'm used to the Midwest and used to that part, this part of the country. I love it out here. My wife's from Southeast Kansas, so coming out here for her is coming home, and coming out here for me is a place that I considered home. I mean, when I left Emporia State, I think I was 35 or 36. I had spent 8 years there. So that's the majority of my life and probably the longest place I lived in one spot.
Yeah, I remember the first time I met you, we were in the West End Zone, and you it said you're a little bit better graces now with your mother-in-law because you had brought your wife a little closer to home. So that's always
exactly
good.
Right. Wife and two grandsons. She liked me a lot. I don't know how happy my mom is with it because I moved them away from Eastern Ohio, but
I think a lot of times the ladies went out, right? So they kind of get to go where they want to go. But it worked out good for you that you got to come back. So talk a little bit about, you know, starting off in college and all that. So tell us how you met your wife. How did you meet Emma?
I met her at Emporia State.
Okay.
And I faked an injury. No, yeah. She was an athletic trainer, and I had got hired as a defensive coordinator at Emporia State, and we'd gone through our first season. About halfway through the first season, I actually hurt my back throwing because I thought I was young and athletic, and I'm not. So I went into the athletic trainer and told him my back was hurting, and he said, well, why don't you go down here and we'll do ice and stem or whatever, and brought Emma over, and Emma did the treatment. So she talked to me the whole time, which I thought that was just normal. I guess it wasn't. You know, I really talked the whole time. The next week, my back felt fine.
Right.
But on Wednesday again, God, my back hurts. Can I do this again? So I went in there for about, I don't know, 4 weeks until the season ended, and then kind of got to talking to her a little bit more from there.
Okay. So you guys have two kids, right? So now about how old? I mean, we don't have to have details, but are they in school age yet?
Dominic's 4, Elijah's 1.
Okay. So not yet. So future athletes?
No.
No,
we're going to go for academic money.
That's always a guarantee.
Why not both?
They'll be good swimmers. My wife was a really good swimmer. Okay. So we'll go with that.
Okay.
Awesome. So after Emporia State, what was your next stop on the coaching trail?
Youngstown State.
How'd you like that?
I liked it. It was a learning experience. Went there during COVID. So I got hired February of 2020, and COVID hit 4 weeks later. So you want to talk about joining, we were a new staff. We were taking over a program, and COVID hits. So just like everything that could go wrong at that time was just, I mean, it was tough. It was a tough transition, but learned a lot.
What was the hardest part of that season?
Not being able to have the relationships you wanted to have, whether it was with players, whether it was with the staff. Youngstown was a bigger, more spread out city. So it was a little bit different than what I was used to. My defensive coordinator, someone I'm still pretty close with, Joe Schaefer, he lived in Cleveland, and he commuted because his wife had a great job in Cleveland. So he drove 40 minutes every day, so I never saw him. And then on top of that, with COVID, nobody hung out. No one was able to really do anything. Some of our staff lived downtown. We lived in a suburb outside of it. One of our other close friends lived 30 minutes in the opposite direction. So it was hard to really get together, especially with COVID.
After that, you ended up at Gannon University. Mm-hmm. How was Gannon?
Phenomenal. Just a blessing in disguise. A place you didn't, I mean, I had heard of Gannon. I had knew a little bit about it. I didn't know a whole lot about the football program. And lucky enough, I was recruiting in Erie, and that's where I met the offensive coordinator. So when I was going through everything and was looking, I gave him a call, told him the situation. He said, well, we need a defensive coordinator. All right. he had the head coach call me that next night. And from that moving forward, I drove out there, I interviewed, and I remember calling my wife when I left and saying, if they offer me the job, I'm coming. This is a great fit.
So interesting. And so then you wind up coming to OSU, and I heard something I should ask you. So I know you received a call, and you can kind of walk us through the steps, but mm-hmm. I also heard that possibly, did you take snacks on the first initial interview with OSU?
No. So yes and no. It was, so Coach Gundy called me, and originally they had planned to come to Erie. I think they were going to meet me up there, and to make it easier on my schedule, because we had recruits. So they were going to show up on a Thursday evening. We were going to meet, and that way it wouldn't have interfered with our visit. So I'm trying to plan everything out, get my staff room cleaned, and I was talking to my mother, and she had actually said, make sure you have snacks. So I was
buying stuff. That's always a win, right?
Yeah. So I had snacks and everything in the defense staff room, and then the snowstorm hit, so they couldn't come in.
Right.
So I had all this snacks and drinks and things in my office that I brought here when I got hired. So I took it to the D staff room. They still got it. It was just a month later.
I have to ask, what snacks did you provide?
Oh, just candy bars. I bought little miniature Hershey's and Snickers and things like that and some drinks.
Can't go wrong with chocolate.
No.
So you bring the snacks. How did this whole hiring process play out? How did you react when you got the call with the job offer?
Well, it all kind of played out so fast. It was, they were going to come to Erie, then they couldn't come to Erie. Then Coach scheduled everything to fly me to Oklahoma City. And to be honest with you, I didn't really know what to expect. I just was going there to talk football. And like Coach had said, it lasted about 6 hours. I get on the plane to go back, and I want to say it was about 22 straight hours of being up from flying out of Cleveland, flying to Oklahoma City, talking football, flying back. And at that point, it was just sitting there with my wife talking about the situation, talking about what could happen, about a week of not really knowing much. And it ultimately came down to whatever happened was going to be great. We were very happy at Gannon, very happy in Erie. So if it didn't work out, we knew we were set. We knew we had a good job and a good place. If it did happen, and if it was great news, and it was going to be life-changing and an opportunity that we were very excited to get.
We were at Carson last night, and so it was a regent meeting when there's 9 regents that, represent Oklahoma State and kind of oversee things. And so Coach Gundy came out and addressed us last night. And so that's the very first question they ask is, tell us about Coach Nardo. So Coach Gundy kind of walked through the whole process, and I guess he'd interviewed professional coaches, college coaches, even high school coaches, apparently. And he said when it came down to it, there's really only about 6 or 7 guys out there that knew about what kind of defense you do. And then apparently Joe Bob had brought up your name, I think, because you and Joe Bob had a relationship of some sort.
Yes.
And he knew all about you, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just leave it at this. Coach Gundy is super excited that he made the right choice. And so, I'm fortunate because I get to see it. And I've seen such growth just in our defense, just the cohesiveness of the group. And I read a quote that you said when you were at Missouri A&T that basically the coach gave you some advice. Do you remember what that was?
The first thing, Coach Brown gave me a lot.
Right.
Coach used to tell me if a kid can't spell cat and you yell at him, he still can't spell cat.
Right.
So learn how to be a good teacher.
Right.
But the other thing that stuck with me was when we were talking, and I think at that time I was 24.
Right.
And I was in a group of young coaches. We were all between 23 or 27.
Right.
And Coach Brown was, I think, 38 at that time.
Right.
He said, why are you guys doing it? What are your goals? And everyone starts talking, I want to coach here. I want to coach here. I want to coach here. And David stopped us all. And it's like the most mad I think I ever heard him. He said, it better be about the kids. If it's not about the kids, sure, then get out of this profession. He's like, stop worrying about where you go. Worry about who you're with. Worry about the players. Worry about relationships. If you do that, it won't matter where you are.
Right.
And that stuck with me.
And I get to see that every day, right? And so even whenever, and I don't even know if you realize you do it, but even whenever you're just in the weight room or whatever and a kid walks through, I saw you talking to Clay the other day, right, Colin Clay, and you were teaching him some things, and you just take every opportunity, but they receive it in such a good way. And this is my third fall camp that I've got to be up close and personal with, since Casey took the job. And I can tell you it's the best group of kids and the best coaching that I've seen personally on the defensive side of the ball. And I just really appreciate it. It's fun to watch you. It's fun to watch their reactions. You can probably ask any of those kids on the defense what they think, and they're like, it's so different, especially the kids that are not new, that have been here this their second or third season. They just love the way they're being caught, whether they're being taught, what they're being coached. They love the defense, and so I'm super jacked to see, what happens. So,
And so am I. I'm excited to play somebody else.
Going off of what Darren said, I've gotten to talk to some of your defensive players as well. And one thing that has stood out to me is that all of them have said you care about them as people, not just players. And I think that that is so important. They all appear to be bought into your system. I was doing some research, reading up on you last night, and something that you said to your players before or taught your players before is that it's cool to be you. Why is teaching your players that an important lesson?
My dad taught it to me, said it to us when we were younger. And everyone understands when you grow up, people are going to try to slot you. They're going to try to say you have to act this way, or this isn't cool, this is cool. And I was taught very early, don't worry about what people think. It's cool to be you. If you want to be good at academics, don't worry about getting made fun of. Push and be good at academics. If you want to do extra, people are always going to try to either join you. And if you're doing things really well, if you're pushing to be an overachiever, there's two kind of people. People that want to go with you and are going to be drawn to you, or people that are going to make fun of you and try to pull you down. Don't worry about that. It's not about, I read a great quote the other day. It's not about the amount of people you have following you. It's about the amount of people that you've been able to impact if you're in a leadership role. And I thought that was so important because it goes back to exactly what it is. It's cool to be you. I don't need to do anything special. I need to be myself. If you want to be around me because of who I am, great. If you don't, that's fine. I was lucky enough, my wife likes me. So I got at least one person that wants to be around me. Sure. And don't try to press. Don't try to do anything different. Don't try to be something you're not. Be yourself. Your best is good enough. And it allows you to have self-confidence in who you are.
So you come from a coaching family, from dad's brothers. Do you have sisters too?
No.
Okay, so brothers, dads, y'all coach. So when did you realize, so probably for a long time you probably realized you wanted to be coach, but when did you realize, hey, I'm pretty good at this and I have a lot of aspirations to be? And kind of what's your end game? Where would you like to be, right? So
defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
No, I've been humbled very much in this profession. And there's a lot of really good coaches. And I've always thought I was great with our players. I always thought I was worked really hard at relationships. I've had aspirations to always continue to do it. But I can't lie to you and say, man, I had these goals of being the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State or linebackers coach somewhere. I never really wanted that. I've always just wanted to be really good at where I was. There was a time I wanted to be a head coach.
Right.
And I think that was more so along, I wanted stability.
Sure.
You know, my youngest, or my oldest is 4 years old. He's lived in four houses. So I always thought, like, as a head coach, I respect Garen Higgins at Emporia State. He's been there 19 years.
Right.
That's a great life. And a lot of people in this world will never know much about Emporia State, and they don't realize how great of a job he's done. He's had a great life, and I always respected that. So I never really had aspirations of where I would go. I always wanted to be around good people.
Right.
And obviously being here, it's like, where else would I rather be? What would I rather do? Just keep doing this. I get to be around my family, work for a great head coach who's one of the best to ever do it, and learn. And just keep doing what I'm doing.
You know, whenever you first got hired as well, I get asked a lot of questions all the time just because I'm married to the president. And so a lot of people think I know more than what I actually do. And so we kind of briefly discussed, you probably don't remember, but we were on the treadmill. He runs, I walk really slow, he runs. And so we were talking about, I said, you know, I get more questions, you know. Well, first of all, I think I said, so you're the new guy. He said, I am. And so I said, well, you know, I get, you're the hottest topic that I get asked, you know, just, I get phone calls, texts, what do you think about this Division II guy, this and that, you know. And my answer was always, if you can coach and you can lead, it doesn't matter what level you come from. I played NAIA, right? So we play Central Arkansas coming up, right? That's my team. OSU's my team, but that's where I, you know, learned to grow up and all that kind of thing. But it's just one of those things that, and I've seen it for myself, and Coach Gundy saw it. And Coach Gundy's always had a good knack for hiring people that aren't well-known, that, you know, I mean, Coach Mason's probably one of the most well-known coaches we've had hired in years, right? Because most everybody else has been kind of guys in the smaller divisions background, and they've done a tremendous job, and somehow he finds you guys, you know. And I'm sure it's a lot of hard work on him, but I would just tell people, you know, hey, Coach Gundy has hired the right guy. And I said, I don't know. I said, he's young. I know he's going to be determined. He's obviously good at what he does, or they wouldn't have hired him. So I think we have no worries. And so I've really got to see that. So like you say, we're all little, you know, still got the game to play. So up until, you know, next Saturday, it's all good at that point, right?
Mm-hmm. So exactly. Everyone loves it. We haven't given up a touchdown yet.
That's right. So it's perfect.
I'm very popular.
No yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Yeah, well, you hadn't had any, but that's a good thing, but I guess. But anyway.
Along the lines of your coaching, one of the biggest topics of discussion is the scheme that you run, the 3-3-5. I've talked to some of your guys about that, and they all seem to love it. I think it was Kendall Daniels who said, I mean, this is his third scheme or third coordinator in three seasons, and he said, this actually makes me a better football player because when I go to the next level, I'm going to have to learn another scheme. So the more I know, the better player I'll be. And another guy said that they're learning each spot, not just where they have to be, but where everybody has to be, and it makes us a better defense as a whole. They're adapting to it well. What are the challenges, though, of teaching these players, these young players, a new defensive scheme?
You don't know what they don't know. So you have to assume everybody knows nothing. And that's probably the hardest thing I had to adjust to because I'm not a jerk. I don't like walking in acting like, I have a quote in my manual say, there's not a smartest guy in the room. So don't think it's you and stop looking for him, right? And when you go and you have a conversation, when I was teaching this defense, even to our staff knows a heck of a lot more football than I do. They've been doing it a long time. You go talk to Coach Duffy, Coach Hammer, Coach Clements, or Coach Richmond and talk about what they've seen here. Just because they didn't understand what my picture was, our scheme was, doesn't mean that I knew more football, because I don't. And that was a really hard thing for me to grasp, was understanding everyone knows football, but they don't know exactly what I want it to be yet or what we want this picture to be. So morphing it, being able to step back, use different terminology, step back, mold it to a four-man front like Coach Gundy wanted to have done, take everybody's opinion, and then teach it to everybody in a way that made sense to them. And I didn't sound like I didn't know what I was talking about. We had a conversation about 2 weeks ago with a different coverage, and all the players know what it is because they ran it in previous years. I've never run it before. So I had to learn it in the terminology I can understand to be able to reteach it and teach it with confidence. So you have to assume everybody knows nothing while at the same time being able to respect that they know more than you do. And that's the biggest challenge I've had to go through.
So you call, so Kendall, is he like a monster back? Is that what he is? What do you call him?
He's the rover.
He's a rover.
He's the rover.
And so that's your responsibility, right? So you have backup rovers too and all that, because we kind of had this discussion last night that used to be called the monster back, right?
Yeah.
And so that's an old saying for you, Megan. But anyway.
Robber. Robber's the other one, right? Rover, robber.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting. So I didn't know what you actually called him. So he's a rover. So
he's a rover.
What to call him. So, okay.
I think our offense calls it the Joker. Yeah. I think that's what they call it when they're breaking it down, because when they've been studying people, but we called it a rover.
Okay.
I don't know where that name even came from. We just stuck with it at Emporia.
Right. Okay.
Go with it. Well, let's move away from football. You talk football all of the time. What are some of the things you found around Stillwater that you enjoy doing or the places that you like to go?
Have you had any time to do
that? Yeah.
Do you need recommendations?
No, we've gone. So we love to take Dominic out to parks. Like our oldest, he loves to go to parks. So my wife has all these different places that we've gone to. He loves the Colvin, the pool. We went there a lot in the summer with the whirlpool and the tidal wave thing, and he likes that. For the most part, it's just wanting to go home and be around them. So whatever she wants to do, I just smile and go with. Restaurant-wise, we haven't really gone out. We've eaten a couple of the barbecue places. We've eaten at Eskimo Joe's. But we traveled a lot in the summer to go home and see family, because when I left Erie in January, you know, I didn't get a chance to really see my family as much. So went back and saw them, took a trip to Florida, and then anytime else, it's whatever they want to do. Yeah.
Now, does Emma work?
No.
She stays home with the
kids. No, she is a physical therapist assistant, but she doesn't have a job right now.
Okay, good.
What are some of your hobbies outside of football? I mean, obviously hanging with your family, but there's got to be something.
No. I love my lawn. I love working on my lawn. I had some people help me get it ready because I had no idea how to handle the different kind of grass and things out here. I'm used to fescue, and apparently you can't grow fescue in Oklahoma.
Right, very hard.
So I love working on my yard. I want our house to look really good and do some different things around there. But I try to golf. I'm not a good golfer. Like, people have asked me if I was going to go play Carson's Creek. I said, why would I pay a lot of money to get mad?
I was told I wasn't good enough to get mad.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that does make a lot of sense.
Exactly right.
It's like, okay.
But the problem is, you hit a good shot and you think you should do it all the time. You don't realize it's such a hard game. I love baseball. I love watching baseball because I don't coach it. So I'll watch the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's my team. So yeah. I'll get a chance to watch them when I'm home. But my boy, I get home and he wants to watch Bluey, or he wants to watch Paw Patrol or Lion Guard or whatever he's on. And Dad, I'll watch it. So whatever you want to watch.
It's good.
You big Bluey guy? I've heard a lot of good things about
Bluey. Bluey's actually funny. I can't say that too much as an adult, but man, the dad is hilarious.
So you know that's Blatnick's dog's name. Jamie, Coach Blatnick.
Bluey?
Is Bluey
his dog?
After.
Yeah, after, of course. Because his kids are about similar to your age, probably. I'm sure he's maybe like 6 or 5, and the other one's about 18 months old, so they're similar. But his dog's name is Bluey. Yeah, so.
Bluey is all the rage.
It's funny. Yeah. It's about, and the good thing is, it's only about 8 minutes per episode. So you can you got to know how to negotiate. It's psychological warfare with a 4-year-old, right? Like, I know he's got about 30 minutes till he's got to go to bed. He always adds to it. It's like, hey, buddy, let's watch 2. Dad, what about 3 Blueys? Okay, cool. You know you're going to let him watch 4.
Right, right.
So you start with 2. He's going to negotiate to 3, and then he feels like he's winning. We both win.
Yeah, everybody good.
My friend would always set a timer with her son when he was about that age and be like, okay, Jax, when this timer goes off in 5 minutes, that means bedtime. Honest to God, every time it would go, okay, Mom, he would up to bed.
I need to try that.
Yes, try the timer trick.
That's a dream world.
I've seen it work. It's so good, but that's good negotiating tactics to keep in mind.
Well, the 1-year-old goes to bed on his own, Elijah. He'll just, Emma actually said this the other night, all right, time for bed. And he just started crawling to his room at like 6:45. Okay, I guess he wants to go to bed.
Sure.
We're 2 days away from kickoff. Super exciting. It's football season is here. I don't know how much you got to watch Oklahoma State when you were coaching, but what are some of the traditions that you're most excited to see in person at Boone Pickens Stadium?
The walk. I've always heard about it. And even growing up, or spending 8 years a little bit close to here, that was always something that was cool. Being in this environment and not having people root against you. Yes. I was at Ohio U. We played at Ohio State. That was a loud crowd. I was at Youngstown. We played at Michigan State as a loud crowd, but they weren't cheering for you. So I think it'll be really cool to get out there and see this place and realize, okay, this is what it's about. Because you walk out there, and the really cool thing was I wasn't allowed to get on the field for like the first 5-6 months I was here because they were working on the stadium. Sure. So they had all the cranes and everything out, and the field was closed. And I think I waited till about end of June or middle of June. And that was, it's like, okay, this is it. Now, let's get to work.
Sellout crowd this year coming up. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's loud. The walk is awesome. So the walk has grown over the years, right? And so you really can't even walk. I mean, it's that packed. And we have a new buffalo. I don't know if you'll recognize it, but nobody's really seen it yet. But we have a new buffalo, and his name is Thunder, right? And so that's called the Native Corridor. So you guys will walk when you're walking down Hester. You'll walk right by it, but he's on the left. But he's a big, full-size hairy buffalo, right? He's made out of, like, I think cedar or something. I don't really know, but he's alive, right? He's not alive, but the plants are alive. And so anyway, that's going to be something cool down in Hester because we've had construction for Engineering South for the last 2 years. So now all that's cleaned up and it's going to be really pretty. So that walk is something to see. So it'll be fun.
How do you think you're going to feel?
Excited. I hope that it's exactly the way it's always been for me. And I feel exactly the same right now that I did going into my first season at Gannon, that I did going into my first year at Emporia. You don't know what you don't know. And I know there's going to be really good football players we're going to go against, but we have really good football players. I know I'm going to go against really good coaches, but we have really good coaches. So hope that all things equal out the way I anticipate that they will. I've gone up in the box and coached a few scrimmages, and it's still just communicating down to it and talking through it. I think it'll be
stay in the box at the end of the game.
If I was on the field, I'd get a lot of penalties.
That's right.
I was on the field for one game. We were playing at Central Missouri in 2014 and our headset went out.
Okay.
So I had to go down for the second half. And I had never been on the field and since I was a grad assistant when I was a signaler. So I'm calling the defense from the field and we get an interception and we're running it down the numbers and I'm halfway on the field to celebrate with the kid like it was practice. And one of my best friends was our strength coach. He grabs me, he's carrying me off the field. The official goes to throw the flag. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not even supposed to be here.
Right,
and
right.
He kind of picked it up and let it go. Right. But yeah, so that's why I don't think I'm allowed to be on the field after that.
So do you have a pre-game ritual that you do that you go through or anything like that or you think about? Or
I call my dad.
Okay.
I'll get on the field at some point before the team gets there. I call my dad and I'm on the field.
Calms you down and all that. My pre-game ritual was to go to the restroom because I would get so nervous for the first game. I'm like, this is not going to work out, so I've got to – and that was it. Just get ready. So you make the first contact, right? So it's all it calms down once you do that. But before that, it's – I think that's part of the game, right? That's the adrenaline flowing, right? So
that's why we do it. You don't do it to not play the game.
Sure, exactly.
Coach, you made a lot of comments about your dad. What is the best piece of advice he has given you?
It's cool to be you. That's really all it's been. Gives me a lot. The older I get, the smarter he gets. But that was a big one.
Is he going to be able to make the first game?
They are.
Awesome.
Yeah,
cool.
Mom and dad will be here. A lot of families actually coming out for it. So it's going to be fun.
That's good, man. It's exciting. I'm excited for you.
Well, we cannot wait. 2 days away from kickoff. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here with us on the Inside OSU podcast. And before you guys turn away, right now we are about to premiere our brand new PSA for Oklahoma State University.
Oklahoma State is more than a university. We are a promise. A promise to inspire. To demand more from ourselves and be leaders on a global scale. A promise to create, to solve the world's most complex problems, and to give back to our communities. At OSU, we are a promise to forever be loyal and true. Here at the nation's premier land-grant university, Orange is the answer.